Self-esteem engineer Bev Maloon is in the studio. Good morning, Bev.
Good morning, Nikki.
How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Marvelous, thank you, darling. Marvelous. So we are momentarily offline. Hopefully, we'll be online again. But we did get a whole lot of SMSs before we went offline. So I am going to encourage
excellent.
You. Oh, good. No, I think we're back online. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Because a whole lot more just came through. But just a reminder that if you do call, we take your call first. You go to number
one.
You are number one in the queue. 0861 24 24 36. Okay, let's start. Female, 6th of September, 1985.
Right. Female, 6th of September. Got her. Okay, so 1985 would make her how young? 27 years young.
Must you put me on the spot?
Sorry, use your fingers and toes and teeth and everything. Okay, so that would make her about 27 years young this year, I think. And what we have is somebody moving into a different life phase. It's a very powerful time for a woman. If you think back to your time between 27 and 32 or 3, you'll notice that there was a massive shift.
Massive.
Right.
So is it just that age, you say?
It's a massive time for women to make huge shifts. Like in that time, I got married, pregnant, divorced, rediscovered myself, redefined myself, and set myself up for the next 60 or 70 years. Like that's, you know, over the top. I don't expect everyone to go through that. But if you're going to experience something and be able to teach about it, I suppose, you know, the creator like wants you to really get to grips with it. So that was my experience of that 7 or 8 year period.
Sure.
Immensely life-altering, that looking back from 34, 35 to 26, 27, I was like, who? I recognize her. I mean, I know her. That sad person. I know her, you know. A lot of women feel that way. It's a very powerful time for change. And this is where our woman on the 6th of September, 1985, is moving right into. So if you are experiencing what feels like, not cataclysmic, but what feels like an incredibly powerful force starting to propel you in a direction, I would not resist it.
How would it feel to have a force propelling you in a direction?
Well, one starts to feel inside like this isn't right. This is not enough.
Now,
so this
you're questioning.
Doesn't happen. You're questioning, and some people have an absolute existential crisis and have to redefine themselves and et cetera. And that happened for me when after my son and I were hijacked, and we were in that very violent hijacking. We were both beaten up and thrown out of a moving car, and he was 8 months old at the time, and it was life-altering because you could either get bitter or better from all these experiences. There's no two ways about it. And I realized that my consciousness was expanded to such a degree, trying to hold that experience, that I could either fill that new conscious space with bitter or better. That's it. That was my choice. But to fill it with something meant I had to be bigger. I couldn't remain the same. And I had to figure out what that bigness was. What was it inside me that was bigger, that wasn't being allowed a voice? And I re-looked, and I'm writing a book about that. One day that will come out. It's not ready yet, that's for sure. But about what aspects were looked at. There wasn't a corner of myself I didn't re-look at, redefine, give new permission to. And I'm a completely different experience of myself coming into my mid-30s than I was going into them. Now, for people who don't have something so life-changing as an event happening, they will start to question. Women in that age period will start to question. They want more. They want to feel more authentic. They want it to be enough. And so what they'll do is either they will live in denial. And I'm going to say this very carefully because I'll leave no one out. There's no generalization here. Either they will live in denial and they will go forward through that period and they will be unhappy with what is around them. They will feel inauthentic. They will feel like they're not living a truth that they had aspired to or hoped for themselves, but not feel empowered to do anything about it. And therefore, resourceless, they will carry through it and drag themselves through it and enter into their 30s and mid-30s feeling somewhat let down, depleted, and self-defeated, right? Or they will realize in an existential assessment of themselves that they're actually happy with what they have and this is enough for them and maybe they want more or less, but they're okay and they're happy with it. And then they'll move into their 30s in an empowered way, feeling like this is what I wanted. But they will always recheck it. there's no way to move through that period oblivious unless you're completely doped up, right? The alternative is that people look at that and they start to say, is this enough? No. Is this what I hope for myself? No, not really. Is this where I dreamed I would be? Not exactly. Is this the person I hope to be with? I don't feel completely fulfilled. I don't feel even vaguely fulfilled. I don't feel honored, cherished, valued, etc. And that's when a lot of people who are in young marriages, who are in new big positions in business or who are in new businesses, etc., make huge changes. Mm-hmm. And it happens across the board. So what I'm going to say to this woman and to all other women moving into this period and in this period is, if you feel out of touch and out of sync with your whole world around you, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with you. This is your huge opportunity, having come through adolescence, having come through teenagehood, having figured out that you actually have to be in an adult world and you don't have your little teen group or teen bullying or teen whatever around you. You have to define yourself. Having gone through the 20s, you now have to figure out who you are. And that's really what this is. It's an awakening. It's a coming of age for women, this 27, 28 period up until 34, 35. It's a coming of age and an opportunity to give yourself permission. A lot of people have said to me, like, how do you feel being 40? How does that feel for you? And I said to someone yesterday who I phoned to wish happy birthday, and he just turned 40. He's like, oh, I'm 40. I was like, oh, I feel so different. I feel like, oh, I'm 40. Mm-hmm. I don't need permission anymore. I genuinely feel permission granted. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in anyone's opinion. I'm not interested in how you think I should live my life or what you think I should be doing or how I should diversify myself. Not interested. Mm-hmm. I give me permission. I'll trip, fall, and get up again all by myself. Thank you very much. Where I feel I need coaching, I'll ask for it. But please don't profess to think you're my automatic input coach. No. So there is a beautiful coming of age that happens for a woman in this decade. And this is where she is. So knowing what I know about her, I can tell you that she battles self-discipline. She's an unbelievable nurturer. She wants to take care of and heal, save, bathe the world. She's generous to a fault. She has strong opinions and really hopes that the world will improve. And where you will start to thrive is where you give yourself permission to be the nurturer, to be the caregiver, to have the opinions but not necessarily criticize. That's a very powerful place to come into, is to know that you're right about something and still be quiet because you want to win in life and not just in the moment. It's a very big difference between being right now and critically damaging a relationship and being right and being quiet and letting the person figure it out themselves. And even though you think that that doesn't short-circuit their process and you could have helped 5 years ago, it doesn't matter because people seldom want to live up to your criticism of them. They want to figure it out themselves and they want your encouragement. And sometimes we need to run straight at a brick wall and figure out it was a brick wall to go, right, well, there were so many lessons in that error. There wasn't one error. There were so many places where I could have done it better. When we are involved with people who have a very critical and sharp eye, and she has this, we can fall into a trap of trusting their opinion too much. And I'm going to encourage her with this also. Be self-reflective right now. Not self-critical, not self-judgmental. Be self-reflective. Look at you and look at what you really hope for yourself. And if you were your best coach, what would you encourage you to do? Not criticize, not rip to shreds. So, for example, at the moment, I feel completely depleted. I'm not even going to pretend I don't. I am exhausted. I have been in and out of the hospital this week. My mom had major surgery. I have got a practice that has just been finished built. I've got a business on the side. I have books I want to finish writing. I have got so many balls in the air at the moment, and an organization I'm a part of that I promised to have a budget ready for by today, it's not. There are so many different places, a lot of editing and audio that's meant to be on the site that isn't on it yet, and et cetera. It goes on. It goes on. So for people who are high achievers like myself and for people who are success-driven, there's always going to be a to-do list. And the rule I've made for myself is that, and I encourage and mentor people on this all the time, is when you are depleted, you do not have permission to assess yourself. That's it. There's no negotiation on that. There's no way around it. When you are depleted, you do not have permission to assess yourself. You have to be your most gentle. You have to be your most encouraging. so that I could look at myself today and say, you haven't done this, you haven't done that, you promised you'd do this, your to-do list is just growing, you're not finished, it, your taxes, your blah, goes on and on. Or I could say to myself, wow, I achieve so much all the time, and in a week where no one would know what's going on in my life if I didn't share it, I live without the drama dripping off the end of my sleeve, and I carry on, and I contain the people around me, and I contain each interaction, and there's no big grandstand about anything. But I am exhausted, and I haven't got to everything. I will. The world isn't ending today, mm-hmm. and if it does, it will be really irrelevant.
It's okay.
It is not the end of the world. It is not even the beginning mm-hmm. of the end of the world. But what will be the beginning of the end of the world is if I for one second think I am not enough because I haven't done everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not valuable because I haven't done everything. I'm not worthy of success because I haven't done everything. I'm a loser because I haven't done. If I go to any of those places feeling depleted, which is such a natural tendency for people and for our 6th of September bunny, it is a natural tendency for women like this and women in a position of power and men to start to rip themselves to shreds when their to-do list outgrows their timing and they are depleted. And so the rule is, and I'm encouraging you to do the same in this huge period of change you're moving into, huge period of reevaluation and reconnection, recommitment to who you are, I'm encouraging you, be gentle. Mm. Be so gentle with yourself. Make no decisions about where you are or aren't valuable or credit worthy or anything. Just be gentle. You can assess what you've done and you can do the little things. You could actually just get into bed. That's a big thing. Sometimes just getting into a hot bath with a cup of tea and a chocolate is the best thing you can do for yourself. And it's something you would do for someone you really love who's depleted and spinning all over the place and juggling a million balls and starting to feel like they're overwhelmed and not getting to enough stuff. If you loved that person enough, you'd say, sweetheart, come. I'm going to put you in a bath. I'm going to give you some rose petals, maybe. I'm going to give you a cup of tea and a chocolate. And I'm even going to put a movie on your phone in the bathroom. Lie there.
Where's this person?
And just, you have to be that person. I've done that with myself.
I love it.
Do you get it?
I got it.
Okay.
Got it.
Moving on.
Let's take a break. After the break, the mail, 29th of the 9th, 1973. Now, give me that chocolate.
Maybe you'll find me worth listening to.
FM.
5 minutes to 10 o'clock a morning in your element, Nikki Seberini on your radio with self-esteem engineer Bev Malun, taking a look at your numbers. Thanks for SMSing all those numbers through. And you can call us and Bev will take the call first, 0861 24 24 36. So Bev, there's a male out there who wants to hear more, born on the 29th of the 9th, 1973.
Okay, so here we have our star nurturer. This guy just wants to love, heal, bathe, and save the world. You know, if we had our...
He'll put you in the bath with the petals and the
yes,
chocolate.
Yes, this is the man. I don't know who he is, but somebody hunt him down. Honestly. Start asking every guy you know, are you born on the 29th of September? So if he's in his power, mm-hmm. okay, so this is also very relevant. He could be an emotional drama queen if he's not in his power.
Okay.
He could be a total victim. He could be the world is out to get me type personality and nothing ever goes right and I can't believe how caring I am and no one cares for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could be smothering and emotionally draining because he doesn't get out of your space if he's not in his healthy sense of self, completely overdramatic and not giving space to someone else to actually nurture themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when you get up after surgery, right, particularly a joint replacement, mm-hmm. you actually want the person to get up and get going themselves. They have to. They
as soon
have
as
to
possible.
Learn mm-hmm. to trust that new joint. They have to learn to make friends with it almost because it is alien in the body. And it's almost like, well, can I trust it? You know, my other one mm-hmm. was really, really painful, but can I trust this thing? Can I? And then the physio's there saying, put pressure. And it's like, oh, I don't know if it's going to hold. And
scary.
There's that insecurity, right? But until you put the weight down, you can't develop that confidence in yourself. So sometimes we have to let other people who we care for, we have to let them try. We have to let them grow. We have to let them stretch themselves. We have to let them find their strength because it's exactly like my story that I love so much. Not my story, the story I read years and years ago, which I absolutely have owned about the butterfly coming out of the chrysalis. And it has been in this genetic soup and it was a worm going in there and then it turned to ugh, and now it's reconstituting itself. and it wants to come out and it wants to be magnificent and it wants to fly and it believes in itself and it's got its story and it starts to slowly eat the way out of the cocoon and then it has to pull itself through this tiny hole and it's a struggle and someone watching that struggle might go, oh shame, look at that butterfly struggling. I'm going to just help it. I'm going to help it to get out. I'm going to help it. I'm going to just break away the parts of the chrysalis, this cocoon, break it away to help it. And out comes the butterfly much easier because you've made the hole bigger, except it dies because it can't get all the fluid out of its wings by squeezing itself out of this tiny hole, which takes all that fluid from the chrysalis soup out of its wings so that it can flutter and it can be its beautiful self. Right. Now, we do that to each other so much all the time. We see someone beginning to stretch. We see someone beginning to feel uncomfortable, and we just rush into nurture. And I'm sending this as a massive message to this man who has such a beautiful, generous, spirited, nurturing, caring, profoundly sensitive nature. Careful not to smother. Careful not to step in and nurture and save and heal and bathe where someone else needs to do it themselves so they find their strength. They will not be thankful for it. They will not be grateful. There will be resentment that they never got to spread their own wings. Mm. Sometimes you have to let other people and just watch and be proud. This man also needs a lot of containment. A lot of people who are very nurturing and very caring, they need a container.
What do you mean by that?
They need somebody who understands their sensitivities and knows when they're being melodramatic or when they're being sensitive. And I'm cautious to use the words oversensitive because I don't think that's fair. People have different levels of sensitivity. Mm-hmm. But who's to determine, as soon as you use the word he's oversensitive, it means there's a norm for sensitivity and he's beyond it.
Yeah.
Right, which is not okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody has different levels of sensitivity. And he has a profound level of sensitivity. He is easily disappointed and hurt because there's a lot of social expectation he has of the people around him and of how he wants things to be. And because he's so considerate and so nurturing and so caring and so upfront and center, ready to meet other people's needs, there is an unwitting hope that an expectation almost, but it's more like a desperate hope that other people will be as sensitive to his needs and as concerned and it just doesn't always work that way because what does work is communication. It's not fair for you to say to somebody, you didn't meet my needs when you never articulated them. Mm-hmm. It is not fair to get upset and withdrawn and hurt and fall into this abyss of pain, which people call sulking. But it's really when people are seen to be sulking, they're in an abyss of pain that they don't know how to get themselves out of. We have to learn to talk our way out of them. That's what sets us free, communication. So you can look at somebody who does that and say, but you never told me that's what you prefer. No, but you should have known. I always do it for you. No, that's your outreach in the world. That's where you are in the world. It's not fair for you to put that on me like I'm lacking or I'm evil or I'm cruel or I'm insensitive. That's not fair. We're different human beings, but I care about you and I want to meet your needs. Tell me what your need is. I'll do it full-hearted. It will not feel any less for you. I will do it and you'll never have to say it again. So it will be there. But we need to articulate need. And that's a big thing I want to communicate to him. You need to articulate your needs. Not from a space of being a victim. Not from a space of feeling like no one loves you enough the way you love. From the space of saying, I understand myself enough to know these are my needs. And in the same way I wouldn't starve myself of the food I need or the supplements or the medical care, I don't want to starve myself of the opportunity to have interactive needs met. And therefore, in the same way I would ask for things from a pharmacist, I'm going to ask for this from you. And because I trust we're in a vulnerable, wonderful relationship where there's authenticity and connection, I'm going to trust you're going to do your best to meet that need. And the truth is, if you don't, guess what I figured out? Either you don't care enough to make that effort, hard, but it can be true, or you don't want to make that effort, hurtful, but it can be true, or you're not interested. That's it. And then I have to make decisions about staying involved with you as a friend, as a colleague, as a partner, as a parent, whatever. I have a patient who told me recently that her daughter upped and turned around to her at 18 years old and said, you're not a good enough mother for me. Packed her bags and left. She hasn't spoken to her in 10 months.
What?
You're not a good enough mother for me. Goodbye.
Wow.
And I said to her, that must be unbelievably hurtful for you. that must be so painful. And she said to me, I can't even think about it much. The reason it came up is because I knew that her daughter was in hospital last year. And I said, how's her daughter doing? She said, I don't know. And that's how it came up.
Mm.
But this happens. This happens. And the only reason things get so dire and so heartbreakingly drastic is because there's a lack of communication. Mm. You're not a good enough mother for me. Speaks to me volumes of a child in need who did not have her needs met.
Yep.
But in all fairness, at some point, I hope that young woman hears from someone, from the world, from the mirror reflecting back at her, when you have need, it is your responsibility to articulate it, to have it met.
So well put. So well put, Bev. Thank you. And hopefully the 29th of the 9th, 1973, took a lot, a tremendous amount out of that. Not easy to work on all of those elements.
No.
But that, as you say, this is this is what it, life is all about.
Planet Zog.
Planet Zog.
That's what I call it.
Shall we
life
move
on Planet Zog? We're not here to play. We are here to grow and refine and have moments of bliss. Mm. But this isn't about bliss.
Mm.
It's about moments of bliss. There's rewards in your efforts and your daily struggles and what you do. Moments of bliss in an absolute litany of attempts and opportunities and challenges and work and effort. Moments of bliss. And that's lovely. A life without bliss is something else.
Mm. All right, Bev, female, 13th of the 6th, 1969. Let's take a break. After the break, we'll continue with a female, 13th of the 6th, 1969. Are you ready?
This
is 101.9
High FM.
101.9 megahertz of power.
Okay, so the 13th of June, 1969, a woman. Let's look at you. We've got somebody here who has a very certain integrity about herself. There's a distinctive defining about how the world should be and in what way, and anything outside of that can lead to an emotional drama. Now, my first question for you right off the bat is, how's that working for you? Because if you're a judge or an attorney or you're an auditor or you're in forensics in something, you're doing something in a business or a business way where you have to add your input or your analysis, there's no question in my mind that you're absolutely primed for it if you're in your highest potential. There's an analytical, clever, sharp way in which you look at things and you have a dramatic flair about the way you put things together. So it may very well be that if you're in designing or something like that there's huge scope for you to voice that drama. The catch here is that if you're not in your higher potential and you're finding yourself doing things in a way that is self-defeating or batting up against a stage that is not applauding you on a platform that is not asking for an encore, then a couple of things I'd encourage you to look at right off the bat is, where's the drama? Where are you getting involved in the story that is not serving you? Because if we go into life and we hope against, I suppose, sometimes unreasonable expectation, we hope that people will accept us for whatever we are and whatever we do, no matter what level of drama we do it with, that might be unreasonable. Sometimes we have to have a good look at ourselves and just say, okay, perhaps I'm not being reasonable. Perhaps I'm not being fair. Perhaps there are aspects of what I'm doing that are rigid or inflexible, and I'm creating distance between myself and other people. Now, you have a directive nature. You have a bright, super spark nature. There's a lot going on here. But I would be wary of that sense of your own justice that has to prevail in the world. Because if things are not the way you predict they should be or say they should be or hope them to be, does that mean they're necessarily bad or that the people involved are evil or are reproaching you or anything like that? Sometimes it just means that they're not that story. And there's a lot to be said for the stories we believe. Your work, without question, is to get into your own story, to be your social context of yourself without worrying about society's opinions, provided you are doing your best to not do wrong, provided you're doing your best to not harm anyone, living without the scrutiny of others, or independent of the scrutiny of others, rather, because people will always scrutinize us, living independent of the scrutiny of others is a very powerful way to move forward on a daily basis. And when we don't do that, we inhibit ourselves from finding and living and realizing our true potential. And I don't encourage that for anyone, ever. The other thing I'd like to talk about is being in your own story. And people ask me all the time, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, what it means is that we choose the stories we live with in life. If you choose to believe you have to fit into what society says for you, and I mean the society you're in, because cross-culturally there are numerous societies, and even in one particular social culture there's numerous societies. If we just look at Judaism, for example, in the Jewish context, there are so many different kinds of societies and so many different ways of looking at the world and being in the world. And you might think you have to prescribe to the one you were born into, or you might feel you want to prescribe to another, but you can't because you're born into a different environment. It doesn't matter what your demographic or what your background or what your color. At the end of the day, there are stories we tell ourselves, and if you believe them and they're serving you, that's fantastic. But if they're keeping you from living authentically, and they're keeping you from reaching higher and higher into your own potential and living in the world in a way that is more serving of yourself and therefore more contributive to the world and to the relationships you're in, then you're doing yourself and the world a disservice. And that's not what you're here for. We're not here to just buckle and bend our knees and bow our heads and do what everyone around us says. We're here to contribute to the world in a way that uplifts the people around us, even in the smallest sphere, and uplifts ourselves. So if I can hear, like, give me an example. Okay, so here's the example. The example is, let's say, even on a simple basis, let's say you are a person who would love to engage in new opportunities, but you believe that in new environments you won't thrive. That's your story. You believe you won't thrive in a new environment. And so you'll stay in the same job for years and years and years, and just keep holding on to this job and holding on to it because you have told yourself a story you believe that you won't thrive in a new environment. Now, if that story is working for you, fantastic. But if you feel less and less enthused about life every day, and you feel more and more that where there are new opportunities, that this little spark inside of you goes, oh, I'd love to try that, but you hold yourself back because you're believing this story, it may not even be a true story. And the power about our capacity to change where we're headed is our power to change the story. So you might want to tell yourself a different story. And now what I'm encouraging you all to do is think of a story you believe that you keep telling yourself. I'll never lose weight. I'll never gain weight. I'll never be healthy. I'll never have a good job. I'll never get promoted. I'll never own my own business. I'll never be able to meet new people. I'll never be able to try new experiences. There's stories everywhere. Ask yourself a couple of questions. One, how do I know that story is definitely true until I try? You cannot know if it's true unless you stretch yourself against those boundaries and see if the boundaries hold or they stretch a little bit and more each time until they just break forward and there's a new story there. Ask yourself another question, aside from how do I know if that boundary will hold or not. How do I know this is working for me? Well, you'll know very easily. If you feel depleted and you feel defeated and you don't feel like in your full power, then that story is not working for you. And then you have to start telling yourself a new story, like maybe this will work differently. Maybe I can try a new story. Give yourself permission to say, well, let me say, I don't know that I can't meet new people. I don't know I won't thrive. And I'm going to give myself permission to try it. My story is going to be, I will survive trying this, and so I'm going to let myself try it. Just that, and then see how the story unfolds. That's my best offering. I hope that has value in people redefining themselves and giving themselves permission in this powerful place we call planet Earth to move forward and redefine, regroup, reach higher into your potential, be more serving of yourself and others and your community, and honor your creator by being on the planet, doing things that are significant, even if it's just in your own world.
Thank you, Ms. Milun.
Thank you.
Words of wisdom. My dear, you will be back in the studio next week. I will not be here.